The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. The second hour is live. We're an hour away from talking to two coaches who faced each other 20 years ago in the first game after 9/11. And we'll talk to Lou Holtz and Jackie Sherrill in just a few minutes. Mike Griffith joining us in near moments as well. We've already had Matt Corral on, and we will get back to your calls. Lucretia is in Arkansas. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to tell the guy from Georgia earlier, I've been an Alabama fan for 62 years. We've been accused of a lot of things. We're loud, we're proud, we're arrogant sometimes, and sometimes some of us are rude. But I don't think we've ever been scared. He might want to score an offensive touchdown before he accuses somebody of being scared. Their defense was awesome. I watched the game, loved it.
Well, thank you for enlightening us, Lucretia McEvil. San Diego is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
We are well. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to tell you that I want to pay my respects 20 years from 9/11. We think that everybody remembers where they were at that time. And I'm calling you from Quito, from South America, and I'm a big fan, and I want to pay my respects to the great country of the USA.
Well, thank you very much, Santiago.
I'm a Florida grad, and I'm a huge, huge SEC homer. You know, I love your show. I love my Gators. And I want to ask you a question. They are telling me that, I keep hearing that there's a QB controversy in Florida right now. And maybe Dan Mullen, he's saying like maybe it's not a controversy. We're sticking with Emory. But what is your opinion in what a coach should do in these instances? I remember when Dabo Swinney took Kelly Bryant out because he wanted to put Trevor Lawrence, this awesome freshman, and he took a risk and he took a gamble. And I mean, this kid is now in the NFL. So what do you think the recruits and the young guys respect more? A coach that maybe show this type of loyalty that maybe Dan Mullen is showing to Emory, that this kid's been like 3 or 4 years in the program, or the no matter what happens, I'm going to give my team the best chance to win, even though maybe Anthony Richardson is just a freshman. I mean, I am trying to decipher, but what is your take on it?
Yeah, Santiago, I don't think it is a controversy yet. I think we'll see a lot more this weekend. And, you know, think about it pragmatically. You have Alabama next week, and you have a quarterback in Emory who has experience and has a certain skill set, and Richardson is still young and I think to a degree raw, maybe not for long. So I would be very careful in terms of how often I bring him into the game. I think you'll see some of the same things that Mullen employed in 2006 with Chris Leak and Tim Tebow. There are certain packages that you develop, but I don't think it's a wise move to get in there too quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I am thinking the same, because I think Emory is the one with more, I mean, he's more most prepared, but I don't know. I just wanted to say, like, to put in the minds in the kids, like maybe saying, like, no, I want to play with this coach because he's showing loyalty, and he's going to stick with his guy that he's been with 3 or 4 years. Or, no, I want to go to a place that they're going to give me the best chance to play and the best chance to the team to be successful. I mean, regardless who is playing if he's a red sophomore, a senior, or a freshman. I mean, that was like most of the things that I was like, I don't know, analyzing in my head. But I think, in my opinion, we should still stick with Emory, and let's hope for the best. I mean, we Gator fans, I think we are so hungry for, because it's been a long time since we got like the national championship. So we wanna quick fix. You know, if we see something, okay, Anthony Richardson is gonna be the next. I don't know, Cam Newton. We don't want him to leave the program like Cam did, so we're gonna start him now. So I think we need just to, I don't know, take a break and just analyze the things with a cool head, and to see that maybe we need to just like continue. And I believe in Dan Mullen, so I need to keep like, you know, believing in his style, and we're gonna, at the end, we're gonna see some results.
Sandy Iago, thank you. I think you raise a really good point. I appreciate your call, and you be well. Thanks a lot. So let's continue. Terry is in Orlando. Hello, Terry.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? Happy Thursday.
Thank you very much.
First of all, I want to say that I'm a OU alum and a lifelong OU fan. My question is regarding the Big 12. Officially tomorrow, they're supposed to invite BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. And they're supposed to, and I'm told, that inviting those four teams will still make it a Power 5 conference. How can adding those four teams, or adding six, or adding eight, compensate from losing OU and that other team? How do they decide who stays and becomes a Power 5 and who does not? Is there a critique or a list they have to check off?
It's a good question.
I don't see them being a Power 5 team.
I think it's a once Texas and OU leave, it's going to be either a very bad Power 5 conference or a very good group of five. I don't know yet. I think ultimately the powers that be of college football, the commissioners, determine how you rank and how you fit into it. But ultimately, that league, it's good, but it does not replace Texas and OU. There's not one school among those that to me is a wow factor. They're all individually good football programs and good athletic departments and good universities, but they don't do it, and you know, there's no way you can convince me that league is getting any better. And I think the key remains, when does OU and Texas get out of there? And I think now that you move four in, depending on when they start to play, I think it helps expedite the departure. We'll have the commissioner of the SEC on tomorrow afternoon from Fayetteville, and you can bet we will ask him that question. When we come back, Mike Griffith, his first appearance since the big game in Charlotte. We'll find out the latest on JT Daniels as well, and what Mike thinks of the overreaction of fans all across the board. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple.
Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We're back, and we are really looking forward to chatting with Mike Griffith, first time since the big game at B of A. And, Mike, before we get into what happened last week and all the hullabaloo and the controversy about Clemson and Georgia and the how everyone looked, good or bad, what is the latest with JT Daniels, and will he play Saturday against UAB?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if he's going to play Saturday or not, Paul. You know, all indications would seem to be, but there's been some reports that JT has been limited in practices. You know, JT actually had taken a shot in scrimmage two around August 21st and, you know, might have taken an upper body bruise, been a little sore. I didn't think it affected his performance against Clemson. He was only sacked once against the Tigers. JT did the post game, in fact, and all seemed well. Now, a lot of these guys go through treatment and have limited reps throughout the week. I mean, that's pretty normal at other positions. It happens on occasion at quarterback. So is this much ado about nothing, or could this be the start of a quarterback controversy? I don't know. Nothing surprises me anymore covering the Georgia Bulldogs.
Quarterback controversy? Is that what I heard you say?
Well, I mean, if you play out the scenario that Carson Beck plays and plays really well, I suppose that people would want to sit back and evaluate that. I mean, Carson Beck is a really talented quarterback. You know, I was talking with Hudson Mason. He was a quarterback at Georgia not too long ago. He's an ESPN analyst. 2014, he beat Clemson. He played injured. He said, you know, if I'm JT Daniels, there's no way they're keeping me off that field if there's any way I can play. And he said, there's a reason why guys like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning were notorious for not wanting to give the backup any opportunity. It's the first step towards losing your job. Now, I don't know how far along that is, Paul. I don't like to play the what-if game, but when information leaks out that the quarterback's reps are limited and then he may be dealing with an injury to one of his core muscles, there's all sorts of room for speculation, and certainly it's a fast train when we start going down that road of what could happen when Georgia plays UAB on Saturday at Sanford Stadium.
Okay, Griff, let's go back and unpack for the final time the biggest game of the year and how long it's going to resonate is anyone's guess, but your treetop takeaways from what we saw and what it all means.
Well, it was fantastic. I mean, think about it. Bowl games usually have about 3 or 4 weeks of buildup because they don't announce them until so late. This game had 7 months of buildup. There was so much scouting and so much planning, and the defensive coaches get the win. Venables completely crossed up Georgia by playing more drop eight zone coverage. Georgia wasn't ready for that. They didn't expect Clemson to play left-handed. They thought Clemson would bring their pressure packages. They had man beater patterns built up. So Georgia was forced to try to adjust during the course of game with very young receivers. Now, Georgia only played one receiver, Paul, that had more than 10 catches last year. At that, Jermaine Burton, Kirby said he missed about two-thirds of the practices in the offseason and wasn't in game shape. So that was a pretty, I would say, a not up to par receiving corps for Georgia. And it was difficult for JT Daniels to have to make those in-game adjustments. And his statistics reflected that. 22 of 30, 135 yards, and an interception. Not the greatest. Clemson was even worse. DJU with the pick six, all the talk about the mobility. He was sacked 7 times. And if you're keeping count, that's 16 sacks in the last 2 games for the Georgia defense against 2 allegedly mobile quarterbacks in Desmond Ridder at Cincinnati and DJU down there at Clemson. So the defensive fronts were dominant. By the way, Tennessee was looking at hiring Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator at Clemson. Elliott telling the media, it hurts to see the bad things that the fans are saying. Yeah, coach, when you don't score a touchdown and you get exposed, it does hurt. Probably better for Elliott and Tennessee that he didn't come to the SEC, because it hurts every week when you lose games here. This is what happens. This is why you're paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. Fans get upset. Yes, this is the SEC. That's the ACC. Clemson will go back, Paul. They'll knock down all the bowling pins. They'll have the bumper pool lanes there with all these easy teams. We'll probably see them in the playoffs again, and everyone will think they're just fine by then.
Let me get to what we have heard here all week from fans. And, you know, the game was won. It's significant. Nobody is denying that. But and I know you alluded to some of the players who weren't there, but how is there any other way to describe Clemson's play? Was it all about the players not there, or did we misread this Georgia offense?
Well, what a lot of people are wondering. I think it had a lot to do with the receivers, but I'm going to give Clemson's defense. I'm going to give their defense and Venables a lot of credit. I mean, you got 11 returning starters. I mean, these guys are salty. They're good. Georgia's essentially their backup receivers with the extent of the one receiver who hadn't practiced much. They couldn't get much going. The scheme was set up well. It was a tightly played game. It was tightly contested. Sometimes games just take on that tone where somebody's going to break. Somebody's going to make a mistake. And really, Georgia's defense was kind of, I thought, the story of the game, the resiliency, not just the pressure, but holding Clemson to 2 yards rushing. I mean, Clemson had like 23 attempts for 2 yards. I mean that's unheard of these days, right? We'd heard that defense was dead. We'd heard that you had to outscore teams. Yet and still, I think at the end of the day, Georgia's going to have to evolve into that team. And if there's a positive takeaway for Georgia, it's that this is not a finished product. Put the quarterback deal aside for now. It's hard to do that, I know. But you've got to remember, they're going to bring back Dominic Blaylock. They're going to bring back Kyaris Jackson. It's starting to look like George Pickens really might be back by the end of the year. And their tight end, Darnell Washington. So this is a team that's going to get much stronger and much better as the year progresses. This team will continue to evolve. And you're going to see a lot of that offense that Todd Monken was brought in once he's got receivers that, as Kirby Smart said, line up in the right places and are able to make blocks in the open field. There was a lot of failure to execute. And Kirby came down on that. He said, hey, we don't need pity. He said, we need to execute. So the head coach is taking accountability, and he's not talking about the guys that aren't on the field right now. He's saying the ones that are there right now are good enough to win, and they could be in for an early test against UAB.
Talking to Mike Griffith. Mike, moving on from that game, and I know you have a lot of opinions on various things. If you had to pinpoint one or two things over the weekend that really intrigued you, got your attention, could be a huge story moving forward, what are they, or is it, depending on how many things you saw beyond what you were doing in Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, beginning of the end, Fred Orgeron again. I mean, we talked about this last year with all the off-the-field issues that LSU went through. They continued to plague the team. When those things are going on, and I've covered enough programs to know, when those investigations are going on, when those kids are getting called out and having to do interviews and there's police cars in front of the football, that's a distraction. Okay, that's a big distraction. I'm not saying that's happening now at LSU, but there were some issues last year off the field that were related to how some of the sexual misconduct deals were handled by the administration and the coaching staff. That was a distraction. Now, it looked like to me LSU had gotten past that. They had a very strong win at the end of the year against Florida. You know, perhaps that was a mirage. I thought that was an indication that this LSU team was back on the rails again. Orgeron got to hire some new coaches. I think he actually interviewed them this time before he hired them. Novel thought. But to go out there and get beat like that by UCLA, that's disappointing. That's disheartening. That's not a matter of talent, Paul. That's a matter of buy-in and coaching. And I think LSU, if they don't get this corrected quickly, I think this could be the beginning of the end. And you hate to jump on that narrative because we've all come to love Ed Orgeron as he has recreated himself from the guy he was as an assistant coach, you know, that had leagues scrambling to check into him before he could be hired anywhere, to this beloved, you know, head coach with these wonderful Cajun quips and a big smile. So he's recreated himself wonderfully, but now he's got to win. So that's takeaway one. Two, the Alabama offense. You know, I know it was Miami. I don't think Miami is just a paper tiger. I think they're pretty decent. I was very impressed. But I wonder, when you have a quarterback that exposes himself, that extends play, that puts himself in the open field, is this shades of Tua once again? I mean, Tua was fantastic when he was healthy. But how durable is this Bryce Young going to be? And how exposed will he be against some of the SEC defenses? Is this a quarterback and an offense that's built for a 12-game season and playoffs? So those are two of the thoughts I came away with Looks like Bama's still dominant in the West, and looks like LSU may be in trouble this season.
On the Alabama quarterback situation, let me ask you to expound on that, because I'm reading maybe too much into what you just got through saying. What are you saying? Spit it out.
I'm saying it's hard to keep a quarterback healthy in the SEC, Paul. It was just a couple years ago where I think there was only 14 that managed to start the same quarterback in every game. And mobile quarterbacks in general have a hard time staying. And this is a young quarterback. This is a very young quarterback. This is a kid who doesn't want to give up on plays. I had an opportunity to go up to Mater Dei High School last summer out there in California and spent time with Bryce Young's former head coach and offensive coordinator and the rival head coach and defensive coordinator. And the thing about Bryce Young is this: he's just mobile enough to get by, but is he mobile enough to survive the entirety of an SEC season? These are legitimate questions. His high school coach, one of the greatest high school coaches in the country, by the way, Mater Dei dominates like no other, said this is a running back playing quarterback. And I think that's great in high school, but I don't know about a running back playing quarterback in the SEC. This is a tough physical conference, and I'll be interested to see how Alabama protects him moving forward.
I can see the headlines across Alabama tomorrow. Griff doubts Bryce Young can win a national championship for the Crimson Tide. I know that's not exactly what you said, but Griff, that sounds not, like what you said.
That is not even close to what I said, Paul. You are the master at times. I love it. I mean, you are
questioning Bryce Young's health moving forward. There's no getting around that, Griff.
Well, I don't know how I couldn't. You know, it wasn't too long ago that Nick Saban left Tua in a game up by 4 or 5 touchdowns, and he suffered an injury that I think derailed what would have been a national championship season. You know, and this offense is still relatively new in terms of, you know, the quarterbacks and how much you put them out there in the flats. I've got questions not just about Bryce Young. I mean, this is nothing that Alabama or Bryce Young should take personal. I've got questions in general about putting quarterbacks in this style of offense.
And in the remaining minute, I need to rush, but I don't want to let the Ed Orgeron comment go by. You said maybe he can correct them. I'm trying to understand how that happens, because you know, you spend the entire offseason correcting mistakes. Once the season starts, you know it better than anyone, Griff. Things are going 1,000 miles an hour. It's hard to correct things once you get into the season.
Well, he's got a good trigger. He's got Max Johnson. That's where it starts, and you start to win some games, and you get some momentum, and that's how you turn it around, right? Wise coach says winning solves everything. LSU needs to start winning, keep their foot on the gas, and get some momentum.
Well, it'll be a while before they face a good team that they can get some momentum. Griffin, Mike Griffin joining us. Thank you so much. Always interesting. Always headline grabbing, especially in Alabama right now, where they are going to be digesting what he had to say all morning long across the sports shows. We are heading to the break. Your phone calls continue. Lou Holtz and Jackie Sherrill will join us in 30 minutes.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And Shannon is up next. Good afternoon, Shannon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, bud?
We are well. Thank you.
Paul, did I hear a woman call in earlier said that Alabama fans have never been scared?
Right.
Yeah, there were a couple of seasons between Stallings and Saban where if they weren't scared, they damn sure should have been. I mean, I remember a couple of couple of 4-7 and 3-8s through there. But hey, let's not quibble. Did I hear your previous guest just say that Venables had 11 returning starters on defense for Clemson?
I don't know what he said.
Yeah, I think that's what he said. And all 11 were back, and Georgia didn't have the top three receivers. And yet I hear people coming on this show constantly bashing Georgia's offense. Paul, I work with a defensive coordinator who used to tell our kids all the time, if we score, we might win. But if they don't score, we can't be beat. And I sit and I look back, you know, everybody always wants to talk about Georgia's 1980 national championship season. Could you imagine the criticism Vince Dooley would be getting right now if it were 1980 and Twitter and Paul Feinbaum were in effect the way they are now? Because Georgia beat Tennessee by 1 point that year, 16-15, beat Clemson by 4, 2016. I'm looking at the scores right here. Beat South Carolina 13-10. I mean, it wasn't like they had an offensive juggernaut when he won the national title in 1980. And I know it's a different year, but Paul, defense wins championships. And I don't think Kirby cares if he scores 41 on offense or one on offense, as long as he scores more than the other team. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're right. You're 100% correct, Shannon. What's happened, though, is that the narrative of college football has changed recently with these high-octane offenses. And we are now conditioned to that, although you should, anyone who knows this rivalry should know better. And you know, in a first game you've coached, you're trying to avoid mistakes that will cost you the game. And that's how both of these guys viewed it.
Listen, any rational fan that has any football knowledge that watched that game knows that Kirby Smart and Georgia defense took a lot of chances against Clemson's offense, because they sold out to the blitz, betting on the fact that DJ Ugalelo, or whatever, however you pronounce his name, couldn't escape the pocket and hurt him the way Trevor Lawrence could have. I mean, they made themselves very vulnerable at times, and you have to think, Kirby knew, I can't get in an offensive shootout with these guys because I don't have any bullets offensively to put in my gun. All my receivers are hurt, and up front, Clemson is very good, and we're not going to be able to ground and pound against them.
I think you're 100% correct. Thanks for the call. Harold is up next in Georgia. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir, Paul. All right. So, just like what he was saying, that Clemson defense, 11 starters. Now, that Miami defense, it may have returned just as many, but Miami is a paper tiger, as Griffin just claimed that they wasn't. They are. They are not that good of a football team. And you're going to tell me that we're trying to compare a Miami and a Clemson? And all these Alabama fans are like, oh, well, oh, we hung up so many points. All right, well, yeah, but look who you played. You played maybe a top 20 team, maybe. I think Florida State is better than Miami. They played Notre Dame like it. And, I mean, and this is just week one. So, all this criticism on this Georgia offense, it's week one, Paul. And look at the defense that Georgia played.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's always too much overreaction after the first week. We're desperate to talk about things. Some schools didn't really have good games, so they talk about your school. Hey, thank you for the call. Matt is in New Orleans. You're on the air. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Paul. I really enjoyed the Mike interview. Griffin, you know, the only thing about it is it sounds like he was bringing in Tessio Clemenza and the Turk to hit Bryce. Other than that, it made a lot of sense to me. I think that I personally believe that Georgia has a hell of a team. And I listened to Georgia. It was my favorite game last year, Georgia and Cincinnati. And Cincinnati had the most – look, the defensive coordinator went – to Notre Dame rather than choosing LSU. Poor LSU at the last part. But that team had a defense even as good as Georgia's was versus Clemson. And I'm telling you that that game is a microcosm of Georgia's season because as the fourth quarter came about, JT opened up. He was as good. He was the best quarterback since Matt Stafford himself, you know. I'm a talking guy, so, you know, I'm telling you the truth, bro. What do you think?
I think it's a tremendous overreaction. I don't think anybody can really tell too much. And I've talked to a few coaches this week that all point to what Georgia didn't have and what Kirby had to do. And I think it's really pretty simple to understand. They lost the game. The excuses would not work as well. Hey, thank you for the call. Let's continue. And George is up next in Virginia. Hello, George.
How you doing, Paul?
We're doing great.
My question is about Notre Dame. I've been a Notre Dame fan ever since Eric Parsegian, Lou Holtz, Dan Devine. And, you know, they had good teams. They won championships. But today, now, it seems like Notre Dame can go undefeated or lose one game. When they get to the playoffs or to the championship, they get run out of the stadium. I mean, what is going on? What do you think is wrong?
Well, it depends on how you want to look at it. This is a program that 5 years ago looked like it was imploding, and to Brian Kelly's credit, he made some important coaching changes, and they've been to the playoffs twice now in, what, 3 or 4 years. They're good. They just can't quite get to the level of everyone else. Now, you talk about, you know, who has Notre Dame lost to? They lost to Clemson in the playoffs, and they lost to Alabama. It's not easy getting better than those two programs. But I was once a critic of Brian Kelly. I happen to think he's done a pretty good job, and it's just really a matter of can he get enough players in there that can deal with Clemson and Alabama. And right now, yeah, you know, we saw the win last year without Trevor Lawrence. But I'm not sure he can, but, you know, what do you do? This is 2021, and Notre Dame is a significant program, but it's hard to move up right now in college football. Thanks for the call. Let's take a break. The former Notre Dame coach will join us in a few minutes, Lou Holtz. We'll talk about his time at South Carolina and a game against Mississippi State 20 years ago. We are continuing with your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And let's check in with Keith, who is on Long Island. Hello, Keith. Keith, 1, 2, 3, gone. Steve is in California. Hello? Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Fantastic. Thank you.
I am a longtime Longhorn fan. I've lived out here in L.A. for 31 years. And the whole world has just changed. We're going to the SEC. We have all new coaches. And I'm moving to Tennessee next week.
Really?
Help me. Yes.
So you're going from California
to SoCal.
Where in Tennessee?
Lebanon area.
Okay. I do know that.
East of Nashville. My friend has about a 100-something acre farm. We're building a house on it. My wife just retired. And, you know, we're extended family, you know. Because out here, everybody tries to, you know, their family's so far away. So then when they move, they were like, y'all have to come with us. We're like, okay.
I don't blame you.
And so we're going, and my truck, whom my friend painted with Longhorn stuff all over the side of it, as a treat for me writing a screenplay for him, it's going through Arkansas on another truck right now. I mean...
Something about a screenplay in Arkansas. I got my attention.
Well, no, the truck, the screenplay actually took place in Tennessee. But my truck is actually physically in Arkansas right now.
Well, if you have it stop, I'll try to hook up with it tomorrow and read this screenplay.
It's got a screaming Longhorn on the side of it, about the size of...
Well, you won't find too many Longhorn fans in Lebanon, Tennessee, I can assure you.
Oh, no, I've already visited, and they saw UT on my stuff, and they'd go Vols, and I'm like, what?
No, that's a different UT.
Yeah, but it's a whole new world for UT fans. I mean, we got all new coaches, a lot of new players. Our basketball team is from Mars, for all I know, and a new coach, I mean, and a new stadium coming. We're going to the SEC, and here is a Longhorn fan calling Paul Feinbaum, of all people.
Well, Steve, the day the SEC admitted Texas. I was granted clemency on everything I've ever said about the Longhorns. So that's all in the past.
Well, we've had days where I've said worse.
Well, I am glad to hear from you. I can't wait for Texas to start playing. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Harrison, who is in Arkansas. Harrison?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are well. Thank you.
Well, so I just wanted to talk about, you know, our new team. I feel like we've changed a lot in the past couple of years, you know. KJ Jefferson, he started slow last week, but he really picks it up in the second quarter, and I think he just continues that this weekend. We'll be in pretty good shape.
I do like the home field advantage. I don't think it's going to be easy, but we'll talk to Sam Pittman around this time tomorrow, so I hope everybody will be watching. Stuart is in North Carolina. Hello, Stuart.
Paul. What's going on, baby?
Stuart, we are doing great.
Hey, the guy from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I was way ahead of him. There is going to be a controversy. That's right. Carson Beck, if they put him in, he was Mr. Florida football. And that guy that was calling from Georgia, that Georgia fan talking about JT Daniels, the next Stafford? No. Carson Beck is the most talented kid I've seen come into Georgia since Stafford. So there is going to be a controversy. And the other Georgia fan, I want to call him out about that 16-14, 1980. Scott Warner returned a punt. Scott Warner picked six. No offensive touchdowns. Herschel Walker ran for 68 yards that game. No offensive touchdowns. And they won it. Clemson's always had a good defense. We just took care of it and had a better defense, just like we did in 1980. And my last thing, Paul, it's going to separate the boys from the girls in week three. Alabama going to Florida and Auburn going to Penn State. That's going to tell you a little bit about that SEC West. And by the way, Miss Sydney Crimson says hello.
Thank you very, very much, Stuart. Good to hear from you. We are 2 hours in. Lou Holtz and Jackie Sherrill joining us in the next segment. They met on the gridiron for South Carolina and Mississippi State 20 years ago in the first college football game played after 9/11. It was a Thursday night game. It nearly didn't happen. We'll talk about that and the careers of both gentlemen right after this.